A natural med isn't just a substance you take. It is a lifestyle that one lives to amplify their health. We don't always choose how long we will be on this planet, but we can take action on the quality of life that we wish to enjoy.
The Natural Med Podcast interviews different professionals and experts who look at improving the quality of health so they can live a more fulfilling life. Whether that be physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, or spiritually, we discover the secrets to their own journey and the small steps individuals can take on a daily basis to improve the quality of their life. Come with me as we travel, research, and discover how we can make incremental changes on a daily basis to live a more fulfilled and balanced life. Hey guys, it's Nicole with the Natural Med Podcast. I'm here today with Dr. Max Morrison. He is a board-certified ER physician, and he's also the author of this book, Stop Sabotaging Your Future, Live Your Life the Way You Want. So welcome, Dr. Morrison.
All right, yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and can you introduce yourself to us and kind of tell us a little background, why you became a physician and, what inspired you to write this book?
Sure thing. So I'm from New York originally, Long Island, just grew up outside New York City. I was always interested in helping people, so my journey of becoming a physician kind of started off. I was an engineering major. I liked what I was studying in terms of the science and, kind of using it to problem solve. But when I was ready to graduate, there weren't really a lot of jobs in Long Island for my field. I would have had to move, and I wasn't quite ready to do that yet. So my sister, was kind of like, oh, you're such a caring person. And she was in nursing school at the time. And she's like, oh, have you ever thought about becoming a doctor? So kind of joke that I was dared to became a doctor on a bit of a dare. But I was like, it didn't seem as far-fetched. I already had a lot of the basic science background prerequisites. So I kind of looked more into it. And I was like, this does seem like a field I could really get into. And sure enough, just took another 2 years after college to do some prerequisites, finish and take the MCAT, and then finally got into school and then moved down here after all my training. So,
yeah, and now you're in the Dallas area.
Yep.
And I've known you for a couple years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now. We first met when I worked in the ER here locally, and you're a physician, and I've known you for years. Mm-hmm. And then you all of a sudden just texted me out of the blue and told me you wrote a book, and I read it, and I was like, wow, this is awesome, because it really goes aligned with kind of our mission and goals in the podcast, so just health and wellness and everything in general. So what really inspired you to write this book?
So I had, going through the medical training aspect of it, it's, as some you might not know, it's 4 years of medical school and then at least 3 years of residency. And it's definitely has a reputation for being pretty grueling. It's not as bad as people make it out to be, but it can, they kind of put you down to build you up, a lot of training programs do. And so going through that process, I gave a lot of, took a toll on my mental health in terms of having to deal with superiors who were kind of, again, putting you down to, try to teach you, but it's a very hierarchical and you're constantly kind of being made to feel that you don't measure up and you're not good enough. You really need to have a lot of resolve and strength to combat that. And then the other aspect was on a personal note, or my personal life. I was engaged to a woman and she was wonderful and just kind of it didn't work out, and I realized I didn't love her anymore. And so kind of breaking off that engagement, it was like about 6 months before we were supposed to get married, kind of put me in a dark place, to use a common phrase, and just kind of finding some difficulties of, okay, here I am, I finished my training, I'm supposed to be on top of the world, and I felt like I wasn't there, kind of what's missing. So went on a journey of exploration and did a lot of research into psychology and well-being and just all the aspects that are involved with that. And that kind of inspired me to say, hey, let me take what I've learned and the experiences I've had, put it in a book and see if I can help others with that. So
yeah, that's awesome.
So one of the things you mentioned in the book was as you're finishing up med school and your sister suggested or finishing up engineering school and your sister suggested this, you're like, I didn't really like meds, pre-med students. You hadn't really thought about that. And then, but, you know, regardless, you jumped in that field and like, can you go into that a little bit more? Like maybe like some of your hesitancy to like make that big of a change?
Well, I think that you, if you ever met, no offense to any pre-med students who might be listening, but there's, if you ever interact with a pre-med student, they always make it seem like they're going through the worst of everything and, oh my gosh, organic chemistry and physics and all this stuff. And it's, you know, they can't go out or can't do this because they have to study, study, study. So it's just kind of, that wasn't my style or my, you know, don't get me wrong, I worked hard, I studied hard, but I also like to go out and be social, and so kind of wondering how I would fit in with people that were, again, that classic type A personality where they're just go, and so I was worried again at UC shows, you know, like Grey's Anatomy where everyone's cutthroat and trying to step on each other, and so again that was part of my hesitancy of like, okay, are these really the people with whom I want to be colleagues? And thankfully, again, I think I talk about it either in the intro or throughout the book, of just that wasn't my experience at all. Everyone in med school was very helpful and friendly and looking out for each other, so it was definitely a way better experience than is commonly portrayed.
Now that's interesting because that can definitely kind of steer you towards or away if you even in my field of being a nurse and being an ICU nurse, there's such a I guess we have our feelings and our judgments towards ER nurses. So when I went from an ICU nurse to an ER nurse, they're like, oh, you're going to be like chaotic and unorganized, and so there's that like having that judgment against
everyone in their different tribes and how they perceive outsiders, so just learning that, okay, what the stereotype is, like there's some truth to stereotypes, but they don't always measure up, or it's, you kind of have to keep an open mind and explore for yourself and realize that not everyone's going to be the classic prototypical ER nurse or physician.
And what field did you end up in, or specialty?
So now I'm doing emergency medicine. So again, how it works, you go into med school and then you pretty much can go into whatever field from there. But once you choose your residency, you're kind of locked into that field unless you go back to do another residency in a different specialty. So for instance, you couldn't switch like from orthopedist and be a general surgeon. You'd have to go back and go to a residency, do a general surgery residency. So I did my residency in emergency medicine, and that's where I am right now. And it's been great. It had its ups and downs, as if you read the book, you'll find out. But it's again, a rewarding field, and
I didn't mean to back us up a little bit because you were talking about how you had accomplished all these things, and I think in the book you even quote Miley Cyrus about it's about the climb. So sometimes you think at the end, oh, I've achieved all this, you think that's where the happiness is going to lie. But you got to that point and you still weren't really satisfied with where you were. So that's what kind of led to the discovery and search. And tell us a little bit more about, some of your research and how you came out of that.
Yeah. So just really coming out of it, of again, just exploring it, like obviously Google is a great place to start. And then just kind of figuring out, really doing introspection, figuring out what is it about where I am that is making me unhappy. Looking at it of, okay, you again passed all these milestones, and how exciting it was to complete each, pass each exam or finish each rotation on your residency or training program. And then kind of realize when you get to the top that there's nowhere else to climb up to. You're kind of it. You're there. So coming out of it was learning how to be happy with where you are. I think that's one of the things, and I talk about in the book, is there's a whole chapter on gratitude of just learning, okay, being grateful for appreciating all that you've done, and learning to just take a breath and relax and say, hey, instead of focusing on what's missing in my life, focus on what I do have. And then, another chapter talks about creating new challenges. So again, you may have climaxed or peaked in your career, but there's other things you could focus on, whether it's traveling, starting a family, buying a house, you know, donating your time, volunteering, mission work. You know, there's so many things that you could do that are new challenges to kind of keep you motivated and center your life so that you're not focusing again on what's next.
Yeah, I love that because, you know, it's sometimes you get caught up in the negative and the negative and you're like, I've worked this hard, you know, why am I not happy? And then if you just take a deep breath and take a step back and be like, look at, you know, what we've done. Like for us personally, it's, you know, our kids, we've raised two great kids and just kind of looking back like, you know, okay, like I should be grateful and thankful for what I have. But then also in turn, having those goals and keeping, you know, pushing forward and having something to look forward to.
Yeah.
So, just, you know, writing this book, I assume that's one of your goals right now and, and you starting a family as well.
Yes.
Go into a little bit more for that for us.
About the book or the family?
Both.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, when, having, you had asked too about like research I had done. So I had, again, kind of when I was at that lowest point in my life, you know, that I had done, looked into some authors and bought some self-help books and kind of just started to pick and choose, you know, you're not going to agree with what everyone says or, but they kind of, if you can take a little something from each one's perspective, it helps you. So that's what I wanted to do is kind of take the things I've learned and put it into a book with my spin on it, offering a lot of, it from a medical angle. Cause a lot of, again, most self-help books, you'll see some that are by psychiatrists and they could even be MDs, but I think very few, if any, are probably from like internists or emergency medicine doctors. So, I thought that being in that position, especially again, as Nicole can attest, I mean, you see so much pathology in terms of psychiatric disease in the emergency room. And it's not just the people that are coming in for suicide or depression. It's just the people that come in with chronic chest pain, chronic abdominal pain. And you just realize so much of that is tied to your mental well-being, how much our body is connected to our psychiatric state. So having being able to see that, and again, you see the people that have these same patterns of behavior that just, whether it's their not taking their medication, so they come in every week because they're, you know, in heart failure or they're, you know, continue to drink, abuse alcohol and they need their, you know, stomach drain, they're, you know, like a paracentesis. you just people that don't seem to learn, you know, so that's what I kind of wanted to focus on in this book of like how to break those maladaptive patterns of behavior that are just kind of have you going around in circles and not moving ahead and improving your life. As for the family that you mentioned, so I talk about in the book too, I did actually come out as gay after I broke off up with my fiance. So I found a wonderful husband and he was definitely very much into starting a family. And so we both aligned. That was one of the things that we kind of matched on in terms of, you know, goals for our future was, you know, having kids down the line. So his sister was kind enough to offer to be her surrogate.
Aww.
Yeah, so it was nice. Made it very special, and she did a great job and had two healthy boys. And, we got to take them home back in March. And, so they're about 5 months old now and doing great. And, yeah. So.
Aww.
Yeah, again, another thing that you're saying, like, kind of keeps you busy and gives you something to certainly live for and focus on and to want to be better, you know, so that you can provide for your kids and be a good example for them. So,
Your world has forever changed now.
Exactly.
You're a parent. It's crazy. It is. So how do you think your goals, do you feel like, when did you write this book?
I started it like kind of before the pandemic. So maybe like 2019, and then I had put it down. So I maybe wrote like two or three chapters and I was like, put it on hold. And then the pandemic hit and all of a sudden everyone's locked inside and you had a lot more time to sit down and finish it. So then my husband, Christian, kind of really pushed me, you know, once he found out I was writing it, he's like, oh, you should definitely go ahead and finish it. So it was really a good motivating force to just go ahead and get it completed.
I feel like, you know, I saw that too when I worked in the ER. You see people that come in for, they have chest pain or abdominal pain, and it's like a, you know, there are what we should call frequent flyers. Mm-hmm. They come in and they come in, and it's like, you know, I wonder, is like their actual pain or is it just, you know, also related to their psychiatric health as well. Like, mm-hmm. Is their environment influencing these behaviors? Are they, you know, it's just, it's interesting to kind of see that. And it's like, how do you kind of help somebody who maybe that's like kind of their normal,
right?
You know, their family, that's, you know, kind of like how they live. Like, mm-hmm. maybe they don't prioritize, you know, what they eat and what they put in their body. They don't prioritize exercise. So it's like, how do you help those people? That's a big question.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, again, they call them in, you know, medical terms, the somatoform disorders, where people have these physical symptoms that are tied to really a psychiatric condition. Mm-hmm. So again, I mean, oftentimes you can see chest pain commonly in the emergency room, and you'll run every test and it's all negative. And finally, mm-hmm. I'll ask them, like, have you been stressed with anything recently? Like, is anything stressful going on? Or and oftentimes you'll get an answer of yes, like, you know, I just broke up with someone, or mm-hmm. having job difficulties or something. And people don't realize that stress and anxiety can definitely cause chest pain. And, you know, so how important it is, you know, and how disconcerting it is if you're already suffering from stress and anxiety, then you get chest pain and now you think you're dying, you know. So it's important to raise awareness about that, of people just, again, understanding how tightly our bodies are tied to our minds, and how important it is to take care of both of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you feel like are people usually receptive to your, you know, guidance and feedback on, mm-hmm. like, you know, maybe you should look at, you know, kind of helping yourself as a whole with your anxiety? Are people usually receptive to that? Or
I think more often than not, and I think people feel relief too when you first tell them, okay, it doesn't look like you're having a heart attack or anything emergent. And then when you kind of get them to open up about something that they may have not felt comfortable admitting, or, you know, unfortunately, you know, in the emergency room, we don't have a lot of time to have a full, you know, 60-minute session to kind of psychoanalyze or really help them work through their stress, but kind of at least giving them a diagnosis where, okay, this isn't something cardiac or pulmonary, it's, you know, probably more mental. And understanding that, again, your pain you're having is real, you know, mm-hmm. It's just coming from a different place. It's that your body is taking a stress and it's manifesting as pain, mm-hmm. rather than, again, being a clogged artery or a lung or something, you know. Yeah. So it's, I think a lot of people are receptive to that. And then again, you'll get some people that, you know, oh, it can't be stress, it can't be that, you know. And again, we can't prove it is or isn't, you know, and I'll tell them that too. It's not, there's a test that, oh, you're definitely stressed, you know. Yeah. It's kind of a matter of putting the, you know, having someone who's has the right clinical situation, and you've ruled out the other, and getting them to kind of be open with themselves and honest with themselves. So, so I think most people are receptive to it. Yeah.
I think besides stress, I think stress is huge, but I think you have a chapter in here about being true to yourself. And I think sometimes, and not for everybody, I know there's chemical imbalances and everything, but I think sometimes people just get so tired of not being themselves, or like projecting something. Or for me, it was working in a job where I didn't really agree with upper management and how they were treating, mm-hmm. you know, even the people underneath me. And I'm just like constantly conflicted and having to, like, you know, drink the Kool-Aid and, you know, pass that down. And it just, you know, builds to this like overall dissatisfaction mm-hmm. with life. And just, it can get to the point where you said, you know, this dark place, you know, maybe some of that was from not being able to just be who you really were. And I think a lot of people struggle with that because they're either trying to be something they're not, or they're trying to be cooler than they are. They're always trying to keep up with someone else and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And it just leads to this like discontent, depressive state. And mm-hmm. Then the answer in most medical cases is like, hey, let's take some pills and fix you. And it's like, that's just, you're just treating symptoms, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, you're not solving the problem. And yeah, again, I think the science is, research is showing that, like, the chemical imbalance kind of theory that we've been working with, you know, has been guiding our psychiatric treatment, might not be as true or as solid a diagnosis or a pathology as we had once thought. And, you know, again, I mean, I'm sure we haven't talked about your feelings on this, but like the, maybe the overprescription of psychiatric medications to people that are just, again, like you said, masking symptoms, whereas it sounds like, I know you guys, and certainly with my book, want to, right, get people off those medications. Like, there are going to be those people that, yes, they need to be on medications, but I think most people can probably at least get off of one or two of their medications. And I don't mean that just for psychiatric, but also talking about things like your blood pressure medicine, cholesterol medicine. I mean, if you make some life changes, you know, the goal, you know, the ear, I'll tell patients, like, I'm going to start you on this medication, but the goal is to be that you're not on this medication for the rest of your life, you know? So if you eat right, if you exercise, you know, we can get you off this metformin or, you know. So again, yeah, there's truth to that of being, like you said, true to yourself. And it's stressful when you, and I talk about that in the book too, about, yes, you want to be who you are and you need to be true to yourself, but also you need to fit in with a society and work with other people, you know? Yeah. So I think one of the things or trends you're seeing is these people on maybe TikTok or you're just kind of have no filter. You know, they're just, hey, I mean, Lizzo, for example, you know, is wearing scantily clad clothes. That's great, but you have to realize that's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, you know? Right. Like, you can support her or not support her, but you can understand the controversy about someone who's dressing a certain way provocatively, and, you know, so you have to realize, okay, like, that's great, you want to be who you are, but also you have to live in a world with 8 billion other people who might have opinions about that, so...
Yeah.
And then again, one of the things I talk about in my book of, you know, especially when you're in a training, if you're not the highest up. So if you're someone who has a boss, you need them to coach you and to nurture you. So kind of you might have to bite your tongue certain times and pick your battles. So it's finding that balance. Right. Again, you just certainly don't want to do anything that you're morally, you know, absolutely morally opposed to. But you also need to, okay, is this the hill you want to die on? Is this, you know, worth the battle of something that could jeopardize my future or my opportunities within this company or within this group. So, yeah, again, there's lots of, it's not so simple as just be yourself, right?
Yeah.
It's, you have to be yourself, but also coexist with other people.
And ultimately,
are you tired of feeling sore and stiff after a hard workout? Do you struggle with chronic muscle pain and inflammation? If so, Lone Star Naturals CBD Muscle Cream is here to help. Our specially formulated cream contains a powerful blend of CBD and other natural ingredients that work together to provide fast-acting, targeted relief for sore muscles and joints. Simply rub the cream into your skin and let it go to work, helping to reduce inflammation, improve circulation, and provide a soothing, cooling sensation that lasts for hours. But that's not all. Our muscle cream is also made with all-natural, plant-based ingredients, making it safe and gentle for even the most sensitive skin. So why wait? Try Lone Star Natural CBD Muscle Cream today and experience the relief you deserve.
To get things done, like if you want to be productive, you know, I may have a, you know, boss that I don't agree with, but, you know, I need to, you know, the goal of whenever I take care of patients, like I have to make sure, you know, our goal is to do the best thing that we can for our patients. So sometimes that's, you know, okay, I don't agree with exactly how things are running, but I need to make sure we provide high quality care and get things done. So and that's kind of a balance, you know, sometimes that's hard and
certainly. Yeah. Again, it's what's balancing. Yeah. The pressures you get from your administration and then also dealing with difficult patients, you know, the patients that are cursing at you or the ones that are
at you,
or less than pleasant, you know,
to
just
hit you.
Exactly. You have to kind of, you know, you might want to hit them back or, you know, get down to their level, but being a professional and you're doing your job means putting that aside and taking care of the patient the best you can. And, you know,
and you just sedate them, right?
You
don't hit them back.
We don't play around in the emergency room. Yeah.
Safety first.
So yes, it is helpful to have access to certain pharmaceuticals.
Short-term medications.
So we've mentioned balance a couple times and I did write this as like half the time I feel like, you know, I just want to sell my house and retire and you know, open a surf shack on a beach and, like, just spend time with my family and just, you know, enjoy the success I've already had. and see how long I can make this money last and just kind of withdraw from everything. But then the other half of me is like, no, I need to find something else that I can be passionate about. And, yeah. you know, I'm 20 years away from retirement. I need to find something else to keep mm-hmm. working at and stuff. Like, how do you find a balance of contentment but also staying motivated?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's going to be a little bit different in that regard. But I think, like you said, people idealize, right, sitting on a beach and just, you know, having a margarita or pina colada and, like, that's the rest of your life. But I think, by, you know, you'll get bored with that
2 weeks
pretty
in,
quickly.
Yeah, it's like, you're sunburned. And like,
yeah, sand. Yeah.
And cirrhosis of the liver.
Yeah, cirrhosis. Yeah, yeah. So, again, I think you can do that, but finding, again, something else to do on the side. Like, you're going to get bored just sitting on the beach all day, every day. And so, again, it doesn't have to be... you know, a job, you know, you can find, you know, working through a church or volunteer mm-hmm. organization or, again, writing a podcast, doing a podcast or writing a blog or whatever it is, just something that you can have to focus on that where you can see growth and that you're improving yourself. I think that's a big thing of just where you can look back either from the day before or a week before and say, I've done something, I've accomplished something this week, you know, whether it's writing an article or learning a language or you're learning a skill, just something that you can focus on. So again, the balance doesn't have to be 50-50, you know, it just has to be whatever you're, maybe some people could be 50-50, some people could be, you know, 10% mm-hmm. activity, doing something productive, and 90% leisure. You know, everyone's going to be a little bit different, but the bottom line is that if you're unhappy with what you're doing, what's going on right now, that's a time to look and, you know, what the first chapter is about, of like find that wake up call on saying, hey, what in my life needs to change? What is not giving me satisfaction?
Yeah, I think you mentioned this in the book too, that, you know, just like, let's say I did pull the trigger and I just sat on a beach somewhere and stuff, like certain parts of me would atrophy, like mm-hmm. my brain, as if I'm not using my brain, if I'm not like mm-hmm. doing it. So, part of us needs that struggle to keep these muscles moving yep. and everything moving, your brain from atrophy and, yep, yeah. you know, and everything else. So yeah, I think you talked a little bit about humans need the struggle yep. to like keep us motivated and keep us like learning and mm-hmm. using. Otherwise our decline can be super rapid. You yes, see these yeah. people that do retire
yeah.
and then they die a couple years later right. and they just kind of fell off because mm-hmm. they weren't pushing themselves.
Challenging themselves. Yeah. 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 No, absolutely. I mean, it's super important. Again, I mean, everyone knows this probably intuitively, or even if they haven't acknowledged it, of just, again, like we talked about, you don't feel good about yourself if you sat on the couch all day and watched TV, you know?
Yeah.
You don't feel good about yourself if, right, you were just wasted away on a vacation and didn't do anything aside from sit on the beach. You know, you might have enjoyed it in the moment, but... Mm-hmm. When looking back, you don't feel fulfilled by that. But when you think about the times that you do feel fulfilled or have felt fulfilled, and again, those are the times when you got a master's degree or a graduate mm-hmm. degree or something, or got a new job and learned a new skill. It's like those are the times where you really feel most, again, satisfied and excited about life and what's to come. You know, so we all need that downtime, and you know, it's okay to take that downtime. But you need something else to round out your life. You know, so I think, again, we all know that. It's just sometimes we need to be reminded of that, I suppose.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. I know I need to be reminded a lot.
You do need to be reminded a lot.
She reminds me all the time. Hey, yeah. Are you going to get out of bed today?
Are you going to do something? But I think, I mean, I know with exercise, it releases serotonin in your mm-hmm. brain. It makes you feel good. Mm-hmm. I would assume that achieving goals and stuff does similar things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, again, they're dopamine and the, you know, all the reward chemicals and happiness chemicals mm-hmm. that we try to, you know, artificially administer yeah. through them. Again, pills and drugs and,
you TikTok. Know,
there's natural ways to achieve that. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I just, you know, anytime you talk about, like, I never, am regretful that I went to church, or I never regret that I went for a run. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you might yeah. not have wanted to go for the run. You might have yeah. like thought this sucks the entire time you're on the run, but after you're done with it, it's, you feel accomplished, you feel
yeah.
good, invigorated. And, you know, so just kind of keeping that in mind of, you know, when you can say that about something, like, I don't regret doing that, you know, and being honest about it, of, you know, like we just talked about, you know, if you sat in bed all day, you would probably look back and say, I regret doing that. You know, that wasn't good for me. It wasn't good for my mental health or my physical health. And I should have done more with my day. And it might have felt good at the time. But, you know, I think that's a good litmus test of, you know, if you look at the activities you're doing and, you know, the ones that you can honestly say you don't regret, you know, you should keep those. And then the ones that you do regret, you, again, not, it's okay to relax every now and then, but you should keep them to a minimum or use them only after you as a reward for, again, a more fruitful activity.
Yeah. And you had mentioned that you wrote this book kind of around the time of the pandemic, mm-hmm. before you became a parent. Is there something you would change with this book now, as now that you're a parent?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's hard to say because I, you know, I'm so new at parenting. Yeah. They're only 5 months, so it's not like a lot of instruction that needs to be, you know, like, or in terms of discipline or interacting with your child. You know, it's more just still very much in that care, you know, complete utter reliance on their, you know, on you for everything they need. So, you know, I guess if one thing to add or certainly would be to talk about, again, the joys of being a parent. And there is a trend, in, certainly in this country, in the Western world, where so many people don't, you know, decided they don't want to be parents or maybe just have one or two kids. And I think it's becoming more and more, you know, I don't want to say shunned, but like looked down upon to have large families, you know. So I'd say kind of just talking about the fulfillments of that. I mean, I even have one of my best friends had talked about, you know, him and his wife are, you know, they, I think they want kids, but they're like, kind of like, if it doesn't happen, it's okay, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, just, oh, well, we like our sleep. We like our lifestyle. And like we talked about, you know, just before of the lifestyle of, okay, going out all night, Friday night, having brunch Saturday morning, you know, watching football Saturday day, you know, that's all fun. But I think that has a shelf life, you know, and when you're 50s, 60s, you're kind of going to look back and say, you know, I wish I had created a legacy in the form of children, you know. So, I mean, that's something I certainly could have written about in the book and, you know, again, wouldn't have had the experience up until now to really...
For the next book.
For the next book, yeah, or a blog post, perhaps. But, yeah. But
it's hard to explain to people that don't have kids about how much it's going to change you. It's one of the life events that I think changed me the most and provided me the most sense of purpose and direction and enjoyment in my life. And, like, the person I was before I had kids is vastly different than the person I was after I had kids. And, like, you know, I think that's the first time I really understood, like, unconditional love and, like, willing to, like, lay your life on the line for somebody. You know, I'd take a bullet for her, but, like, in the arm or the leg, not the chest.
Wow. You know? Yeah,
yeah.
So sweet.
But your
we're going to take a brief break.
But your kids, like, you would do anything for, you know, and it's like this, it's this different thing that like changes you. And I think people, it's hard to explain that to someone who doesn't have a kid. They're like, we've heard that. But they can't really understand it till it happens to them. And then it's like, it's almost like you're a different person from before and after. It's weird.
Right. And I think people don't realize that it doesn't have to be a death sentence. Yeah. You know, it's not like your social life has to end once you have kids. You just have to, it's more work. You know, you have to be more creative. There's more stuff to look around, but it's still doable to, you know, go and see your friends and family and have brunch if you want, or go out for a drink, you know. You know, you just have some kids to keep in mind. But again, it's only 5 months in, 5.5 months in. It's definitely totally worth it. And it doesn't, you know, right, I'm sure as you guys know, there's times where you wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, oh my gosh, I just said, right, we'd give anything to be able to sleep through this night, you know, or to get this kid back to sleep.
Yeah.
And, but it all pales in comparison to the benefits you get of, you know, knowing that every second you put into them is, you know, a reward, you know, it's its own reward. And you, it's hard to appreciate that or see that until you have kids yourself, you know. So again, I just hope that, you know, we can kind of start reversing that trend and maybe make parenting cool again, or, you know, kind of the norm, and just people realizing that, you know, it doesn't have to be an end to your life. You know, you can still do plenty of things, and, you know, they're going to grow up eventually, and then you can resume your life and still have time to travel more and, you know, do the things you felt like you might be missing out on, but...
Yeah, it is. I see, you know, even in our family, I see other parents and they're like, well, we can't do this, we can't do that because we're on this strict schedule. And for us, of course, our kids are, you know, basically both of them are adults now.
Yeah.
But when they were younger, we went everywhere. Yep, like yeah. we just adjusted. Adjust. Yeah. Like you just, you know, bring the pack and play and they
you just make it work. Sleep. And it's like,
yeah, they sleep on the road.
Yep.
Or
We're actually planning a trip to Germany in September. We just planned a cruise with my sister coming up in the next winter. And you know, it's
packing gets different.
Packing
does. It's like 10 times as much bags to carry. But, but other than that, it's
just resetting your expectations. Yeah. Like, I mean, this will be our first time, going to Germany. I've never been before. And, we have been to Europe together, Christian and my husband and I. And, I'm used to a go, 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 and we're going to go see everything and it's going to be great, you know. Resetting expectations, like, you know, if someone's having a fit or someone needs a nap, you know, that means we're going to park it here for, you know, an hour or two, and it's just going to be, you know, resetting your expectations, like, you're going to see what you can see, but you're not going to see everything that you would be able to see, but it doesn't mean you can't go or shouldn't go, you know, it's just, you know, it's going to take more work, and but hopefully you'll get the rewards from it, and
For sure.
Oh, yeah, and I think it's good for kids, too, to kind of be able to like kind of do different things and adjust to changes and kind of see like, okay, it's not always going to be a set schedule. Like we can go and do things and we can adjust and it can be hard and see those challenges.
Yeah. Yeah, so, certainly. Yeah. Just getting them used to it of, right. Yeah. Again, I mean, obviously they'll be young still, you know, only one at the time, but just getting your kids used to different cultures and seeing different, walks of life and different places, you know, just really helps them develop too, you know. So there's just so many benefits to it. And, I'd say go for it and don't let, you know, being a parent hold you back from anything unnecessarily.
Yeah. And just in life too. I mean, people have, you know, they may make these excuses like, I can't do this, can't do that. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, you're talking about goals in your book, like, you know, just set the goals and, you know.
Yeah, and that's another thing I talk about, you know, bringing back to the book of making your goals, but just finding a goal that you can do, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, maybe Europe is a stretch for most people, but, you know, going to Hot Springs, Arkansas might not be, or, you know, just going somewhere more local and like having a weekend getaway of, hey, we're going to take the kids or, you know, go somewhere where we wouldn't normally go. And this I can do. It's in my budget. It's in my time frame. And, you know, instead of making excuses or picking something that's too grand that you'll never, you know, reasonably, feasibly achieve it, picking something, again, that's a goal that you can reach. And then, you know, like I also talk about in my book of making that goal non-negotiable. Like, we are going on this trip or we are going to do this, you know, no matter what. And here's how we're going to make it happen. So, yeah.
It's good for your mental health, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, certainly. Yeah.
Taking a break.
Yeah.
So. All right. So we're a little over on time, but one more thing. So besides reading the book, like, let's say they've read the book. Mm-hmm. Now, what's the first steps you'd recommend to get them started on having living the life that they want?
Okay. That's a tough question. Well, I mean, if they follow the book, you know, I think that there's a lot that they can learn from it, you know. There's a lot of good advice in there. I think that probably the best step, like we just talked about, is finding something you're going to change and then resolving to do it, you know, and whether that change, you know, another example I use in the book of, again, most people, I'm going to start running. They pick like, oh, I'm going to run a mile or 2 miles every day or something. And that might be too much or probably is too much for most people to just go from no running to running a mile or two every day. Mm-hmm. But if you pick, hey, I'm just going to run 5 minutes or I'm going to run around the block every day or every other day, just whatever it is, picking that and sticking with it. So again, making it non-negotiable. I don't care if it's raining out or it's cold out or whatever the case may be. If I got out of home from work late, whatever, you know, just if it's something that's easy enough, a small enough amount of time to do it, resolve to do it, and then it becomes a habit, and then you can start building on that. You know, once you become that 5-minute-a-day runner, you can become a 10-minute-a-day runner, and then a 2-mile-a-day runner, you know. And I think that's a big problem that most people have is, you know, again, reaching too big, making it too unrealistic, too impractical, that it falls apart, you know, a week or two after they resolve to do it, so... That would be my biggest takeaway is pick one thing, coming up with something realistic that you can do and just start doing it. And then I think it will become a snowball effect of once you realize what you're capable of, you can start adding other things. So again, whether that's a fitness example, but okay, I'm going to save $10 a month or a day, whatever it is. I'm not going to buy my Starbucks, you know, one day a week or 2 days a week and put that money and set it aside. Again, something that's easy, that's feasible, and then it'll just, before you know it, you're not buying Starbucks at all anymore, and you're saving $20 a week, or, you know, so it's finding those things that you can do, and then, you know, you can just start building momentum. And
start small, start getting the dopamine hits from, making the little changes, and then just build on those and keep going. It almost like adjust your mindset.
Yep. So. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I love it. So where can we find out more about you and your book? How do customers get a copy of this?
Yes. So it's available on Amazon.com. So just search for Stop Sabotaging Your Future. Again, my name's Maxwell Morrison. And then I also have a blog and website, MaxMorrisonMD.com. Awesome. So you can find there. And I've been trying to, you know, once a week or every other week, create a new blog post just about a variety of topics. Mm-hmm. So I have 3 posts up there so far. And again, working on just kind of whatever comes to mind and something pertinent towards overall happiness, health and well-being, you know, kind of can fit the mold and make it on the website. So, and again, you can contact me there if you have any questions or comments or anything you'd like me to talk about. Welcome to do that as well.
Nice. Well, thank you, Dr. Morrison, for being on our show, and we'll see y'all next time.
All right. Thank you.